Martin Dachof Hey Amud Aleph. Control inhibits the miraculous. Tole Bedat Achirim. Each morning I'm incredibly grateful to each of you for being here, because I think to myself, and to all the people who are listening online, I think to myself, it would be so frustrating and hard for me each morning to have discovered what we discover and have nobody to share it with. Imagine what that's like. You discover something amazing. You see an incredible sight. You go to an amazing place and you've got nobody to tell about it. You can't talk about it. What that must feel like. So I'm very, very grateful that I have the opportunity, right, literally minutes after the discovery, to be able to share it with you and those who are listening online as well. But when we learn something like we've been learning in Masechta Gittin, and today is a really good example of it, I have to say to myself, you know, if people out there would know what we're going to be learning today, this place would be packed and they would be lining up outside. Imagine if I say to you, what we're going to learn today is how we get in the way of Hashem's miracles. But sometimes Hashem's got a miracle plan for us and we mess it up. Not sometimes, it probably happens every day. That we actually get in the way of the miracles that Hashem, the Nisim that Hashem has for us. And there's a way to get out of the way, to let Hashem just do his miracles and stay out of it. Imagine if people knew that's what we're going to be learning today. How do you get out of the way of messing up Hashem's miracles? How important that would be for our lives, and that's what we're going to learn it. And we're going to learn it by understanding a piece of Orach Chaim. Orach Chaim is the parish on the Torah, 18th century. He lived and taught Torah in Morocco, in Italy, and in Yerushalayim. So his work became well known already in his lifetime throughout the world, the North African Sephardi world, the European world, the Ashkenazi world, the world in Eretz Yisrael. And through understanding his 18th century Torah teaching, we're going to make sense of a shiur that the Ritvo gave in the 14th century. And we're going to listen to the Ritvo shiur from the 14th century, where he explains a view of Abaya from the 4th century. And Abaya is busy analyzing a conversation between Rabbi Yoshaya and Rabbi Yehuda in the 3rd century, 100 years earlier. And we're getting all of that kaleidoscoped into one experience in a Matmonim Shir in Ra'anana on an Erev Shabbos on a Friday morning. Or the people who listen to it will hear it on Sunday morning. It's mind-boggling. So let's try and understand the Gemara and the Ritvo, and then move on to the Orach Chaim, and we'll see the principle as a result of that. So this topic we're dealing with is Breira. I gave a shiur a long time ago, early Matmonim days, on Breira, and it actually got published in the Sefer HaZikaron of Rabbi Tanza from South Africa, on Breira, which is a situation where in the present, we're uncertain about something. It could be A, it could be B. Later on, it gets clarified what it is. The question is, does Breira work? Can we say that clarification works retrospectively? And although at the time, a week ago, or a month ago, or a year ago, we didn't know if it was A or B, since now we do know which it is, A or B, it becomes clarified retrospectively. And there are various different consequences of that. So just bear that in mind. And we deal with three cases in this piece of Gemara. The first one is a case Rabbi Hoshaya and Rav Yehuda are having a conversation. It's important to know that there are many Rav Hoshayas in the Gemara. Rav Hoshaya generally, the Rav Hoshaya who edited the Brises, is a very well-known person in the Gemara, but he lived in Eretz Yisrael about the 4th century, the 3rd century. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. This Rav Yoshaya lived in Babylon. So there's clearly another Rav Yoshaya. This Rav Yoshaya, as we'll see from our Gemara, was a Talmud of Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda was a Talmud of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel were the first generation of Amoraim. After Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, it was the end of the Tanaim. So this conversation takes place one generation after the Mishnah. Amar lelavlar, you tell the secretary, write a get, and the get should be, I've got two wives, and they both have the same names. Write a get, and have in mind whoever walks out of the house first. Whoever walks out of the house is going to be delivered a get, and they're divorced. I don't know which one will walk out of the house. Mao, does Barrera work? In other words, the problem is now, in writing the get, at the moment of writing the get, neither the husband nor the sofa, the secretary, knows who he's writing for. But later on, we will know who he was writing for. Does that work retrospectively or not? So you've got Rivka number one and Rivka number two, and he's going to divorce one of the Rivkas. And Rivka number two walks out of the door. Ah, now we know. So Rivka number two gets the get. Does that mean that retrospectively it was Rivka number two who was intended to get the get? Okay, that's the question. Amar Leih Tanitu, he says, we've got that in our own Mishnah. We can answer that. Where the Mishnah says, Yetemiken, Amar Lelavlar, he said to the secretary, K'tov le'ezeh she'ertzeh agaresh. I don't know if I'm going to divorce Rivka 1 or Rivka 2. Make a get for Rivka and have in mind that I will make up my mind in good time and I will give it to the one I choose. Pasul agaresh, well, that doesn't work. Alma, ein breira. So you see, breira doesn't work. You don't say, well, later on he decides to divorce Rivka number 2. So clearly when he was writing the get, he had in mind Rivka number 2. Esme says, how can you say that? We've got a case of a man who says, I'm shechting my Korban Pesach. When you shech the Korban Pesach, when you slaughter a Korban Pesach, you have to have in mind the people who are going to be eating it. So I'm shechting my Korban Pesach for whichever of you, of my children, get to Yerushalayim first. So a certain one gets to Yerushalayim first, he gets his part of the Korban Pesach, and then the question is, what happens to everybody else? Those are the three cases. And then Rav Hoshaya says, Bri, my son, Hoshaya, my son, you're mixing up things here. The case in Psochim has nothing to do with this. The case in Psochim, the father was just being educationally smart. He wanted to make sure that his children get to Yerushalayim in time. So he says, for the first one who gets there, he makes it competitive, he games it. So we know that, you know, you game something and you make a winner and you give a prize to the winner, everybody gets motivated. So he knew his kids and he set it up as a game, but it's got nothing to do with Breyer. It's a different issue altogether. Here comes the important part, the part in bold in the sources. Omar Abaye, Kabai mine toilo bedas acherim v'kopashit le toilo bedat atzmo v'hadar moitiv le toilo bedas acherim. You're going backwards and forwards in completely different cases. I understand we're talking about Breyer. Can a later determination clarify an earlier dilemma? That's the issue. But look what you're talking about. The first case we discuss is Toile Bedaat Achirim. You say the first woman who walks out of the door. I have no control over that. The second case I'm saying I give it to the wife I choose. I have total control over that. The third case is the Korban Pesach with the children coming. I have no control over which child comes. So we're going backwards and forwards between Daat Achirim and Daat Atzmo. And they're not the same. Because if I'm tole bedat achirim, if I'm making it subject to an event over which I have no control, then maybe Breira works. And we'll discuss why. It can work retrospectively. But if I am yet to determine and the determination will be mine, I retain control over the decision. I'm simply postponing the decision. Then Breira doesn't work. That's what Abaye says. Says Rava, my Kashi, what are you talking about, Abaye? It doesn't make any difference. If you hold Breira, you hold Breira everywhere. If there's no Breira, there's no Breira anywhere. Either you hold that the future can clarify the past or you don't. It's got nothing to do with Toli Bedat Atzmo or not. Which is very interesting because you remember Abaye Verova. Remember the two personalities and these two lenses with which to see the world. Rava's lens is facts. Look at the data. Look at the facts. Look at the measurements. We look at it in a quantifiable sort of a way. Is there Breira or isn't there Breira? Don't get involved in philosophy. Abaye says, look at the essence of it. If you understand how Breira works, you will realize that these cases are completely different. They look the same, but they're not the same. Breira is not just a universal concept. It works in a certain way, and if you understand it's working, then you realize it can apply some ways and not in other ways. That's Abaye. Abaye, the Reb Shimon Shkop kind of mind, the mind that thinks philosophically and metaphysically, and Rava, the Brisker kind of mind. Let's just look at the halakha. What are the facts? So we see that same machlok is playing out again here on Daf Chof Hei. Explains the Ritva. I'm not going to go into Rashi's pshat, but explains the Ritva. The time of Abaya. I'll explain Abaya to you. So now just imagine you're sitting in the Ritvos Beis HaMedrash in Spain. Now, the truth is it's not the Ritvo. Although it says it's the Ritvo, it isn't the Ritvo. Because on Masechta Gittin and Masechta Bova Metzia, the Ritvo that we've got is actually not the Ritvo. It's Rabbeinu Karkash, probably. Rabbeinu Karkash was a friend of the Ritvo and part of the same school. They both learned with the Ra'o and they learned with the Rashbo. They're part of that school in Spain. And these two Masechtas were known as the Chidusha Ritvo, but we've established that it's not the Ritvo. The Mosad Rav Kook in 1979 published the first real Ritvo. And this does not appear in the real Ritvo. This appears in the Ritvo that we've got. So it's a little confusing, just as an aside. Says, but let's call him the Ritvo for the moment. So we're sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, whether it's Rabbeinu Karkash in the Beis HaMedrash or his friend the Ritvo. They're giving a shir, explaining Abaya, this metaphysical idea of Abaya that Rova rejects. What is Abaya thinking? Explains the Ritvo that when a person is tole bedat achirim, when you make the decision dependent on an external event over which you have no control, Shaykh Shapir Bei Breira, then you can say Breira. Shahare lo haya davar talui b'tzno ela b'mikre. This is not dependent on his own will, it's dependent on coincidence. What happens? So then you can say, I'm not intervening. Let's see what Hashem does, how it plays out. Who walks through the door first? I'm not making the decision. Hashem will decide that. And if Rivka number two walks through the door, that's how it was meant to be. That's Bashert. And if it's Bashert now, it was Bashert from the beginning. Hashem knew who was going to walk out the door. When I wrote the get and when the secretary wrote the get, Hashem knew who was going to walk out the door. And I said, I'm making the get dependent on who walks out the door. Hashem, you know who's going to walk out the door. So the secretary knows who he's writing the get for. That's what the Ritvo is teaching in his Beis HaMedrash. And we, sitting here today, hundreds of years later, are learning how the Ritvo understands Abaya and how Abaya understands the conversation between Rav Yehuda and Rav Hoshaya. Isn't it just unbelievable what happens when you learn Gemara? 1,500 years of conversation brought into the room one morning before we daven Shachris. What it is, what does that mean? And we understand the metaphysics of intervention and non-intervention. And to understand it better, let's go into the Beis HaMedrash of the Or HaChaim. So here's the Or HaChaim teaching a piece of Chumash when Reuven says to the brothers, Vayatzileu miyodom, says the Torah. Reuven saved Yosef from the brothers. And he suggests, don't murder him, put him into the pit. And we know in the pit there were snakes and scorpions. So what's Reuven thinking? If he's relying on a miracle that my brother will be saved, then he'll be saved from the brothers as well. You don't have to intervene. And if you're not relying on a miracle, how can you throw him into a pit of snakes and scorpions? Explains the Or HaChaim an unbelievable concept. You can rely on a miracle when you're leaving things to God. You can't rely on a miracle when human beings are involved, because human being can override God's decisions. God gave us that power. Hashem gave us the power through our Bechira to sabotage his own plans, Hashem's own plans. So you could say, Hashem decides, I want to save Yosef. The brothers could murder him. It's possible to do that. The Or HaChaim and the Netziv explains that's accepting where a person is an absolute tzaddik, has never done anything wrong. There, nobody can get in the way. But with most of us, we've got enough good and bad in us for bad people to do bad things to us, even if it wasn't Hashem's intention. Bashert doesn't work when human beings are messing it up. Bashert works when you leave it to Hashem. When you just step back a little bit and you let Hashem run the world, then Bashert works. Then you can say, this is how it's meant to be. So Reuven says, don't kill him because you're taking the law into your own hands and you will never know whether Yosef was a tzaddik and when he had these dreams and he was a real prophet, or whether he was an arrogant little idiot. You will never know because you killed him. And you can't say, Bashert, you see, Hashem let us kill him. He didn't stop the bullet. The bullet penetrated. So, and we pointed a gun at his head, we pulled the trigger, and you know what? Hashem let the bullet go. So you see, Hashem wanted him dead. No, you wanted him dead. You don't know what Hashem wanted. You've intervened. Throw him into the pit, and now it's not in our hands. Now it's in the hands of the snakes and the scorpions that Hashem controls. And if Hashem wants him saved, he will be saved. And so it is with prayer. To say, I will decide who I'm going to give the get to, and clearly whoever I decide, that's who Hashem wanted that I should divorce. No, you don't know whether Hashem wanted you to divorce anybody or this one. You know nothing because you made the decision. You intervened. You're insisting on controlling every aspect of your own life. And that's where we get in the way of the miracle. I have got to control everything. You know, you don't know everything. You don't know enough. You don't know enough. Your knowledge base is so limited. How can you control your life, certainly other people's lives, when your knowledge base is so limited? Leave it to Hashem. Do your ishtadlut. Do what you have to do according to halacha, according to what the Torah tells you. Go to work, do your work, and then sit back and let Hashem unravel the miracles. Because if you make your choices and decisions and you override God by controlling your own destiny, then Hashem leaves it to you and he steps back. Either you leave it, there can't be two pilots. Either you're flying the plane or Hashem's flying the plane. Make a decision. Yes, you've got to get the plane ready and prepared and you've got to do all the things you've got to do. But once you're flying, you leave it to the captain or do you want to be the captain? If you want to be the captain, that's the most arrogant thing you could possibly do. And say, Hashem, welcome. Run your own life. You want me to be the captain? No backseat driving. Let me take care of your life. Hashem wants to take care of our lives. And so as we say each morning, review the shir later on today, even if it's a flash review, just in a moment, you go through, you remember Arachaim, you remember Ritvo, you remember Abaye and Rove, and you remember Rav Yehuda and Rav Oshaya, just go through it very quickly in your mind. It can take 15 seconds just to remind yourself during the day of what we discussed in the shir and what emerged from the shir, and then start applying it in your life. Catch yourself, see how many times you backseat drive when Hashem is flying the plane, and just step back a little bit and say, Ribbono Shalom, there's certain outcomes I want and I hope for and I'm praying for. How they come to me, you know better than me. I'll do my piece, I leave the rest to you. So that we can stand back and watch the miracles as Hashem allows them to play out.